Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
And welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Crudy is off today. I am the other devil. I'm Dominic Salvi. I am joined today by another spectacular guest. We have the best friends, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis here on Civic Media on Saturdays 9 to 11.
That's correct. You invited me back. You didn't learn your lesson the first time around, so I'm back once again. Thrilled to be with you this afternoon, Dom.
That's awesome to see you, man. Always, always, always. You know, I got great friends and attorney friends. Thank you, Maggie Dawn, yesterday. James, a lot going on today.
Absolutely.
And we'll get to all of it, we promise. Also, I got to let people know, we giving away some Brewer tickets today. We're going to give away two in the first hour, two in the second hour. Playing my Tigers tomorrow, 12:40 day game. First callers, come on, get us up, 844-967-2789. Get your chance to win some of those tickets. Jim, the news today, obviously, Joe Biden, the president of the United
States. Running again, second term, very exciting.
Wow.
Very exciting, right?
I'm not clear on my own thoughts on this. I'm obviously I like Joe a lot.
Yes.
And frankly, let's just get clear on it. If it wasn't the age thing, I'm being a little ageist. I don't want to be, but I'm being a
right.
little bit ageist. I guess I'm concerned. Obviously, the older you get, things can happen.
Yes.
That being said, I'd rather have Joe there than anybody else that's running on the other side.
Jim. Absolutely, absolutely. And just coming out here, I heard on the radio again that, you know, 71% of Republicans want Donald Trump to be the nominee on the other side. Well, this could be a repeat of the last election. If it is, we hope it's a repeat of the last election
right.
In every way, including the Electoral College, which, yes, indeed, Joe Biden did take, just to be clear, January 6th, January 20th, notwithstanding. We should anticipate that, but we could have a repeat. I agree with you. There is a concern about age. And is it legitimate to talk about it? Sure it is. Sure it is. He is by no means ancient, but there is a concern about that. The question is he competent? I think he is right now. And the American people can make that judgment on their own. Certainly, this man at his present age has accomplished a lot.
Yeah.
And we can make the list longer and longer with each passing day, the things he has done, the things he has tried to do, even in the wake of lack of success, mostly because of legislative stonewalling. So lots of things to commend this candidacy. A big day in American history. Good to know that he is running again, even with those concerns, which I think are legitimate.
U.S. Rep, our friend Mark Pocan said this: I've been doing this for, I think, 30 years this year in local, state, and federal office, and I've never seen as much progress in a single session of Congress as we've had in the last session. I think we've got a lot to point to for him, and I'm happy he's running.
Absolutely.
And when you put it like that, I mean, no doubt. I mean, if age is the only concern, it's not the Biden crime family, as Marjorie Taylor Greene and all these Republicans, you know, going after Hunter Biden and all that, and that will play out. I'm fine with that. If laws were broken, Jim, okay.
Absolutely.
And if you want to investigate Congress, perhaps look at, you know, the son-in-law who got $2 billion from the Saudi fund.
Lots of things out there to take a look at, right?
There's lots to talk about.
And remember, too, as we have chatted before, my friend, a president brings with him a staff, and that means you've got a chief of staff. Ron Klain recently left. This is a man who's been in government for a long time, probably responsible for a lot of those things that Representative Cohen is talking about today. All those kinds of things out there. He appoints, obviously, an attorney general. He appoints members members of his cabinet. All those people surround him, and they too make up government. So you get a package. You get a package. There's a difference between the package you would get from a Donald Trump, as we saw last time, and the investigations that followed, and the package, I don't mean that in a cavalier manner, the group of people he would bring into government that continues to change over time. We see changes. That naturally happens. His labor secretary recently left. We've got a new nominee there. Those kinds of things, they reflect the fundamental concepts, the fundamental views about the way the world should be that the president embodies. And so that's important to remember, too.
Ben Wickler, the chairman of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, said this: "There is no path to the White House without Wisconsin. And here in Wisconsin, Democrats are fired up and united in an all-out push to reelect President Joe Biden." And certainly, Wickler got him fired up here. The Dems here in Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin, of course, she's going to be running again.
Right.
A fan favorite.
Right.
She gets lots of votes from lots of different people. It's going to be super interesting to see how this all plays out. Now, a couple other Dems apparently running or claiming to be Dems.
Right.
Is there a Kennedy, he's right, an anti-vaxxer
right,
guy
exactly,
running?
Exactly, right. A certain quarterback who's now associated with the New York Jets has apparently endorsed Bobby Kennedy Jr. Possibly because of his anti-vaxxing approach. That is good to know for a number of different reasons.
Immunized,
right?
Jim,
there
he's
you
immunized.
Go. There you go. But now he's New York's issue. I won't say problem, but New York's issue. But yes, you've got Bobby Kennedy Jr. out there for a long time, a great environmentalist for part of his early career, advocating at the far end good things about clean air, clean water,
sure,
those kinds of things. More recently, concern, again, this is my perspective alone, maybe he's slowly becoming a Rudy Giuliani. That is, you know, what is happening here that you're drifting into these conspiracy theories and these notions that vaccinations are not good for you? That's again, migrating into an area which we've seen before, good, legitimate people who all of a sudden become a little bit less down the middle of the road, if you will, here. So that's a concern out there.
As a chaos agent, though, could Kennedy, with the name running as a Dem, pull enough? I mean, he's not going to win a primary. You know, he's not going to be Biden
right,
in a primary, right? But
right,
again, given the age, and again, anything can happen to anybody at any time.
Absolutely.
But
right,
as you get towards the older parts of life, the actuarial tables, things do
absolutely,
exist.
Absolutely, right. And you get, by virtue of announcing, again, at that level, with that name, he will plainly get, presumably, enough votes to get on the stage at some point, if there is indeed a debate among Democratic candidates.
There's
may
not
be
gonna
there,
be a debate.
Right?
Come on.
Right? He does have that credibility by virtue of his name coming forward. And there will be people who will simply say.
I mean, used to. Right? I mean, but when you start, you know, you got everyone knows the Kennedy name,
right?
Santel,
right.
Salvia.
Right. Yeah, not so much. Good names, but
absolutely,
nonetheless not popular
great,
in the
great
broad
names,
scope of things.
Well,
right?
Well, certainly. But also not anti-vaxxer. You know, when
right,
you start associating
right,
your name with these kinds of things.
Absolutely.
I mean, what are you telling me? Kennedy, are you putting chips in your body now? I mean, is that are you QAnon in style here?
Right.
I mean, I'm not clear exactly what the motivation is
right,
now coming
right,
and migrating this way. Marianne Williamson also ran last time, but social justice activist,
right.
I guess. But you know, again, I doubt there's going to be any sort of debate,
right?
And
right,
and people, the Dems are going to rally around Biden.
Right.
Any question about that in
right,
your mind, Jim?
Not really. Those kinds of folks, there may be others out there who may draw some attention around the edges. Unlikely, unlike the party will splinter in some way. You're not going to get a Pete Buttigieg or certainly not Kamala Harris, who's suddenly going to say, well, wait a minute, I'm going to run myself. That's not going to happen. And the Democratic Party will be sufficiently organized, dare I say, for once, to bring this home, presumably, for Joe Biden, assuming, again, everything else is routine. And between now and then, obviously, the economy continues to be an issue. Things overseas, all sorts of environmental issues can happen. We've seen that in the past. Those can all influence the course of a campaign. Probably unlikely that if he remains healthy, which we assume he will, we
right,
hope he will,
certainly,
that he will be the candidate and go on to win this next election again. There is no such thing as a certain election, as we know. We saw that on the morning of early November of 2016, when we all woke up and saw that, oh my goodness, Hillary Clinton is not our next president. So anything can happen out there. But right now, this is good news today. We celebrate that. And looking forward to a vigorous campaign by presumably the Biden-Harris campaign going forward.
Don't compare me to the almighty, compare me to the alternative.
There you go. There
and
you go. Exactly,
what's
right,
the alternative right now?
Right.
It's Donald Trump. Who's been what? He's been indicted on fraud charges.
Right. And check back in a few hours where else may be indicted. We talked about Fannie Willis, right? Maybe sometime soon, maybe the Department of Justice as well. And my sense from the early messaging from the Biden campaign is just that. Compare me to the alternative. And I also get the sense that the campaign recently and going forward here is also going to be about broader liberties and rights of Americans. You see him talking more and more about that. He talked about a lot about democracy. Remember his speech not too long ago, chatting about the importance of a republic, the future of who we are. I think it's going to animate a lot of that, which again plays into that notion of look at my opponent. He is not about the future. He's not about human rights and civil rights and all those things we value so very much. I think that's also going to be a major part of his campaign. Again, assuming that things like the economy do not overshadow things, and they probably won't. We're still in some challenged area there. But, you know,
we got this whole debt ceiling thing going on right now, Jim. Right. I mean, and the Republicans probably think they got something to deal with it. They got to corral their own before they can even, you know, tell Biden he's got to negotiate. Negotiate with what, himself?
Exactly.
But I have no doubt the Republicans, these mega GOP, will do and use this debt ceiling fight to get whatever they can out of this administration.
Absolutely. And right now, as we sit here, we do not have certainty about the clarity of the way forward here. Who is going to blink, if anybody? It's usually been somewhat of a compromise. But right now, again, as you indicated, the majority, the Speaker of the House does not have clarity on whether he can bring this over the finish line. And certainly the White House still saying, well, we're not negotiating about anything. Let's do a clean bill, and we'll talk about reductions later on.
Well, absolutely. And this is technically, isn't this Donald Trump's tab that's coming due now? This is the
we're
last.
We're paying the bills from the past.
Yes, we've done this already. When you pass the budget, you're going to deal with it at that point. And this whole thing, to have to go through this two-step process. Yes, let's allocate spending the money, then let's actually pay the money. It's a little, it makes for this kind of problem, negotiation, banter. Right. I'm not clear what you call it, but why go through it twice?
Right.
I mean, it should be a legitimate and efficient government that would not have to say, yes, we're going to do this. Here's our priorities, and here's how we're spending the money. And then, oh, yeah, we got to go beg to cut the check.
Right, right. And it makes people out there who run businesses, who work for businesses, think, gee, where does this government come from, right? Every other business does what? It establishes a budget for the coming year. At the end of the year, if you've met the budget, maybe you've exceeded it in some way, some positive way, maybe you're in the black, maybe in the red, and you do that year after year. Who out there has this option, if you will, to continue bills in the pocket, if you will, and then pay them back over time? It's the United States government. And once again, it prompts people to think, you know, what is going on here? If this goes badly, and it shouldn't, we do need to resolve this problem soon. But if it goes badly, right, it gives people fodder to say, well, that was the Biden problem.
A shutdown. That's right, what they'll go for.
Exactly.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. We will never shut you down. Join us. Going to get into the other branch of government, the judiciary. 844-967-2789.
Political talk, the Devil's Advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines open, giving away some tickets. The Brewer is playing my Tigers tomorrow here in Milwaukee. You can listen to it on the Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 FM and 1100 AM in the Fox Valley, of course. Also in WRCE News from Richland Center. That's 107.7 and 1450 AM. Give us a call. Tell Evan you want some tickets. We will give them away. I got to give them away, folks. They told me to give them away. We'll give them away. 844-967-2789. One of these days,
Evan's got the tickets.
One of these days, we'll keep them for ourselves, but not today.
Not today.
They're the audience. Right. They are for you. We appreciate you listening. Once again, 844-967-2789. Let's the judiciary, man, the Supreme Court.
There are justices out there, it turns out, right?
Clarence Thomas.
Clarence Thomas, associate justice, longest tenured justice on the Supreme Court.
Sounds very fancy.
Right, exactly. Remember, he was nominated by George Bush. Remember, Anita Hill at the time came forward and said, I've got some issues. He was the head of the EEOC, not a judge, before he became a justice. That doesn't preclude you from serving on the Supreme Court. But we had a very tumultuous nomination, confirmation proceeding. And now he's back in the news again. Not that he's been out of the news, but back in the news again, not because of allegations of sexual harassment, but because of all sorts of things related to disclosures of money.
I mean, it sounds very, these Republicans, and I'm going to put Clarence in this, and certainly Trump and their ilk and the new breed that's coming up, very gangsterish. You know, hey, I got rich friends.
Right.
You know, no, I didn't buy the suit. Someone gave me this $10,000 suit. I got rich friends. I mean, that's how they play it off. I don't have anything. Right. I have all these things, but none of it's mine.
And they want to take me to the other side of the planet on a $500,000 vacation. That's what they want to do. And so they're friends of mine, and that's what I do. And you know what, Dom? If you have friends like that and I have friends like that, okay, we can do that. The difference is we're not serving right now on the United States Supreme Court. We're not serving any position, as far as I know, of governmental importance right now.
Now, as citizens, don't we have right? We have a general right to have the impression that our Supreme Court justices are not corrupt or not compromised in their rulings. I mean, people are going to be political. I get that. But this is beyond that.
It is. And so maybe you make reference to something in my own past. When I was U.S. attorney, frankly, I was an assistant U.S. attorney. I need to make disclosures about my income. And yes, my income can only be from one source, and that is the United States government. Your tax dollars paying it. I'm not permitted to get money from any other source. Why? Because you don't want my allegiances spread out there, right? That's number one. And second, I also declared it's still out there on the line if you want to take a look at it. My meager possessions, my car, my house, that's basically it. You should know basically what my financial status is, if I own stock, if I own property, those kinds of things. And much of it has to do with simple translucent transparency is the word I'm looking for when it comes to government officials. It may not be that my decisions will be influenced directly by the virtue of the fact that I have these holdings, but you should know about where my interests are so that if indeed there are matters that come before me, you can say, you know what? You should, let's use that R word,
recuse
yourself, right? You should say, I've got no involvement in this. I don't want, not because I couldn't be fair, but because I don't want the American public to think that my decision-making in this area would be in any way tainted by the fact that I do own stock in fill-in-the-blank, that I do own property here, or that I happen to have this very close, even financial association with a friend of mine who, as you told me late last night, Dom, now it turns out that there perhaps is a connection between this friend and things that are previously pending before the court. Transparency, you want to make certain your justices are deciding cases on their merits and not because they've got some special interest by virtue of their finances. And, oh, by the way, also by virtue of what your spouse may also be doing out there.
Well, thank you. And that was the other thing. Yeah, you can't have a second job. It might, you know, influence you, but hell,
right.
Your wife can. Your spouse can. And apparently the same cat, Harlan Crow, was paying Ginny as well through whatever 501c3 or corporations they set up to facilitate the deal. Here's the insider reporting. Justice Clarence Thomas didn't recuse himself from a 2004 appeals case, even though the company being sued was part of the real estate empire run by Harlan Crow, the GOP mega donor who has showered Thomas with lavish trips starting in 97 and more recently bought Thomas's childhood home, according to Bloomberg. My understanding, Mama's still in the home?
She is still in the house, which also, it's not so just a financial
So that's Mama's landlord? I mean,
right?
What's happening here?
Right. Again, not appropriate under any certain regime that you could envision. Right?
Oh, but it gets better, Jim. Thomas previously told Bloomberg that it was okay for him to accept gifts from Harlan Crow because the GOP mega donor did not have, quote unquote, business before the court. But
it turns out
the 2004 appeal ties the Crow family name to a case that did come before the court. In January of 2005, the court denied the appeal petition, a $25 million copyright claim brought by an architecture firm against Trammell Crow Residential Company, a development company that's part of the real estate empire built by Crow's father. The Supreme Court's decision ultimately benefited Trammell Crow Residential.
And the crow is the crow who's the friend. And that's the problem. And I know that today, to the extent that there are people out there defending the associate justice saying, well, very attenuated, you know, let's look inside Trammell Crow. It's a subsidiary inside of a subsidiary and no direct contact. And no, that's not the issue. That's not the issue at all. Again, it goes to this issue of transparency. You don't even want to have this discussion, right? And how much better we would feel, both of us, and I suspect all of your listeners, if today we could say, you know what? Way back in 2004, when the Crow name came up, even in this case where there may have been a tangential connection by your friend in particular, what did the justice do? He said, you know what? I don't want any appearance of impropriety. I don't want any reality of impropriety. On this matter, I'm recusing myself. You've got eight other justices who can make this decision. That would be the better course of history. That's not what happened.
Well, maybe you have eight, but maybe you have seven. According to CNN, Justice Neil Gorsuch's property sale to prominent lawyer raises more ethical questions. A nearly $2 million sale of property co-owned by Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch to a prominent law firm executive in 2017, raising new questions. No disclosure again. I mean, so maybe we want to expand the court, but hell, maybe we should reduce the court.
And this is the issue. You peel back a little bit, and this story continues to bleed, right? To mix metaphors.
844-967-2789. We see you, callers, giving away some Brewers Tigers tickets for 12:40 game tomorrow. Come back with us. My guest, James Santel. He's a former U.S. attorney. He's a friend of ours. We'll take your calls. We'll be right back.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Giving some tickets away. The Brewers playing my Tigers tomorrow, 12:40 in Milwaukee. We got some callers on. Let's give them away. John, you are the lucky winner. Thanks for listening, John. Thanks for calling. You get the tickets, 12:40 tomorrow. Go Brewers. Any political thoughts today, John? Hello, John. Oh, no, where's John?
I promise he's real. I promise.
All right, man.
He took his tickets and he's done now.
Hey,
right?
You better call back and confirm, John. Hey, Mark from the SAC, you will be next. Welcome, Mark. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's not just Clarence Thomas. I just remember thinking Sammy the Fish Alito. I think he has some shenanigans in his closet as well. Let's remember Brett Kavanaugh. We still don't know who paid off his gambling debts and the disclosure today about, you know, Gorsuch. I mean, it is just there's three justices there who are compromised. I mean, let's face it, pure and simple, they are compromised. Unless you can avoid the complete appearance of impropriety, I mean, you've got no business judging on the cases. I mean, it is just ridiculous that we're accepting this, because even the ancients knew the judges were supposed to be try to be above reproach.
Yeah, ridiculous. The ancients weren't too kind about it, Mark, if I recall some of the things that happened. Hey, thanks for the call. 844-967-2789. Jim, it's like they get away with it because, I mean, he can. What is the recourse? I mean, if Clarence Thomas can accept $500,000, you know, vacations, can he accept $500,000 in cash?
Right, right.
And if he could accept $500,000 in cash, can he accept $5 million in cash?
Right. What's the ceiling? What's the floor on all these kinds of things, right? And it goes to this fundamental notion that, with some exceptions related to the government and ethics laws, which applies across the board, the United States Supreme Court does not have the ethics code that is imposed upon all the other federal judges, all the other appellate court judges throughout the country, all the other district court judges. Hundreds of judges out there have to abide by an ethics code that is known, established by the Administrative Office of U.S. Courts, administered, interestingly, by the Chief Justice, because he's the boss, if you will, of the AOUSC.
So how do we impose? Who imposes? Right? How can we impose? Just, I mean, not, nothing more or less, just the same as everybody else.
Right. some basic recusal principles that, gosh, if I've got an interest in these parties,
I get it. I mean, people have lives. You have spouses. You have, especially at that level, you got contacts and maybe get some business. Right. But if those things come forward, you should absolutely recuse. I mean, at a minimum, if you're going to be involved, then you can't be on the case.
It's a very simple remedy, and that's what should happen here. So where does that come from? Well, we know that John Roberts, and frankly, Elena Kagan, to her credit, has also said, we're working on it, people. She's been out there saying, yeah, we've got this thing underway. Well, we need to work on it perhaps a bit more stridently and hard in the days ahead.
So do they agree on it? Like the justices, like they vote on their own this thing, and if a majority of them agreed with, then that's what the new process is?
They could, in fact, do that. They could establish that, which raises the question, then who polices that, right?
Right.
We're the legislature. We establish our rules. Who polices that? Presumably, then you would have the Chief Justice saying, listen, we do now have this requirement, Clarence Thomas, or any other justice, that says that if you've got an interest, and plainly you do, financial, familial, through your spouse, some other connection, you need to recuse. And presumably he would be able to say that. The other piece, the other place it's come from, would be across the parking lot on Capitol Hill. And that's a big white building with a large dome. That's called the United States Congress. And there is legislation around now pending in both houses. It's not going anywhere right now, certainly coming out of the House, but to establish a code of ethics. And yes, indeed.
For the judiciary.
For the judiciary,
so
right?
For the Supreme Court, a different branch of government.
Exactly.
Can they enforce that?
Would that work? Right. Fascinating. Lots of people debate that issue. My own view is yes, they can, because what they're doing is they're not invading separation of powers. They're not telling the Supreme Court what to do, but they're providing some direction about the ways in which they do it. We know that John Roberts has got to get a budget passed every year. He's got to go to the Congress and say, we need money to operate, salaries. And oh, by the way, we've got to do other things. We've got to keep the lights on at the Supreme Court building. Millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars to support the federal judiciary. So there's that connection as well. I think most scholars.
What are you going to defund the judiciary,
man? Is that the threat? Is that the threat you need to make in order to establish this? You'd hope not. But I think an awful lot of people say, yes, indeed, the Congress, if the Supreme Court itself does not establish and articulate, make clear what the standards are, another branch of government will do that for you. And that's the threat that's out there, with a small t, with respect to the Supreme Court. They should do that and pass it. If the Supreme Court is not doing it in the wake of these recent events, when will they? It's time for this to happen.
And it's not the first time. I mean, if I recall, Jim, it was Clarence Thomas who was the sole dissenting vote on whether or not emails and communications related to the January 6th and the turning over of the all that, because his wife was involved.
Right.
Enforcing he didn't recuse
all
himself
kinds
for that.
Of things, right? That right down the center. And you've got a spouse who's not only taking a position publicly, but advocating for it, presumably getting money for talking about it out there. She is one of the most strident.
She was spam emailing a bunch of people from Congress.
Right.
Yes,
she
and the state legislature, if I recall.
Absolutely. She's reaching out to the chief of staff. Remember him? His name is Mark Meadows, saying you've got to do something about this. Strong advocacy. And then across the breakfast table, here is your spouse who's going up to work today, and he is deciding on whether or not various subpoenas should be enforced, requests for production of documents should be enforced. He is, to the credit of the system, he's the lone dissenter, which also tells you something, right? He's the only one, so the Supreme Court, to its credit, does enforce all of those things and say, yes, you've got to appear, those materials have got to be produced, the witness has got to testify. But the fact that he even votes, again, against the very thing that would be, again, detrimental to his wife's own pursuit of these issues is very significant, right? Right.
You think? I mean, can it get so bad that like the other justices don't kick him out? How can you get rid of? And again, my concern now, we got Gorsuch with something similar.
Right.
Again,
right.
if there's no
what is the
regulation?
Right?
If there's no rules, honestly, dude, I mean, it's a lifetime appointment. Why wouldn't you?
Right. Right. Exactly.
I mean, if you want to get paid, if that is your thing, is to. Line your pockets.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Why
wouldn't you?
You can go out and you can write lots of books and do lots of things out there. You can resign. We have got four justices of the Supreme Court, former members of the Supreme Court, who are making a decent living, not only on their own pension, but doing that. You can resign. Regrettably, we know, too, there are justices in our lifetimes who have died, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Antonin Scalia. You can vacate the court that way. And yes, indeed, you can be impeached. You can be impeached by the United States Congress. Again, members of the House of Representatives can return articles of impeachment. Senate can vote on trial on whether or not you remain in office. Is that likely that's going to happen under our present circumstances, where we've got a razor-thin majority in the Senate and no majority at all? Okay, and a razor-thin majority for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Unlikely that's going to happen. And so, once again, self-policing, or at least policing imposed by the Congress, that's what we can hope for. I would also look for John, right? I would look for John Roberts to take a major role. John, get out there.
I mean, I would think this, there should be some leadership. And it's not just if you start questioning these pillars, this is the foundation of what we do. And it's not that humans throughout history, especially in this country, and hell, everywhere, that we're not corruptible and have self-interest in mind.
We're all flawed human beings, right?
as my attorney, Jeff Scuttleson, has often told me. But if all of a sudden this also starts to crumble, you know, the belief in our institutions, a lot of these things continue, Jim's, because we believe they should continue.
We do.
And there's a certain standard of how things should be and a certain understanding. And certainly there's laws and traditions to uphold those things up. Right. But when you get chaos agents and you see it, like what we just saw with Trump, and I think, unfortunately, what we've seen over for some period of time with Clarence Thomas and now Gorsuch, and as Mark the caller noted, Kavanaugh. You know, he had debt coming in. Where'd that debt go? Well, we don't know. What do you mean you don't know?
Right.
I mean, how's that? Whose job is it to know these things, Jim?
Right. It should be, of course, from the justice himself or herself to say in their concept of rightness and decency, I've got to produce that. Again, laughing broadly, I can see Dom. And so that probably not going to happen. But your point is a serious one, and that is just this. Look at what the Supreme Court is deciding, not just Dobbs last year.
Yes.
Not just a guns case. Look what's coming up. We've got everything, once again, from environmental issues. We've got this recent matter, again, abortion revisited a bit by the Supreme Court just this past week. All these major rulings about everything from health care to education to voting to LGBT rights, they're making major decisions, and here's the point. If at some point Americans look at the Supreme Court and say, you know what, not only do I disagree with your opinions, which you can do, God bless America, you can advocate in opposite directions, but I don't trust them, and that institution is incredible in the literal sense of the word because they're corrupt, they're taking money, and they're not disclosing this, I am no longer going to follow what they say. And that means that when the Supreme Court, in about 6 weeks from now, starts issuing all these major opinions, people around the country say, you know what, doesn't apply to me, not my court, they're not the ones. That's when exactly what you described happens. They begin to crumble. That's when our republic begins to fall. And that's why this is no small issue to talk about.
It's hard. I mean, because if the Supreme Court says, no, you can't have the abortion drug, you go out and manufacture it, or who's going to make it? Who's going to distribute it? I mean, while I get the philosophy, I mean, I follow lots of laws, or I don't follow laws, lots of laws that I don't agree with, Jim.
Right. But you pursue them still. You know what that is? That's the rule of law. Because we've got it so instilled in us, whether or not we take civics courts or not, we've got this notion that when there is a speed limit up there, that, maybe I'm going to go 9 miles over the speed limit to avoid being arrested here. When we've got even more important things out there about the ways in which we engage with one another, we're going to follow those laws because we've got a sense of the rule of law. That's a part of our community. That's who we are. If indeed at some point we say that the very people who are establishing those rules, things that are maybe not quite as simple as a stoplight, things related to securities issues and stocks and bonds, things related to how banks are operated. We've seen that recently. Things related to how our healthcare industry is operating, the prices of drugs, those kinds of things, all those things that are regulated by legislatures, by agencies, and yes, indeed, decisions made by courts.
Decided by courts.
By courts.
Who can take the money and not disclose it, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Right, exactly.
I mean, does it get to the point? I mean, ultimately, the resolution would be that the American people get so fed up, so disillusioned that they vote, through the legislature, bunch of who they want to represent them as a specific issue to expand the court.
Exactly.
That's the remedy.
And you can do that legislative. You don't have to go to the Constitution.
Yeah.
You have to go to the Constitution if you want to change this lifetime tenure thing. That's the good behavior language there. But you can expand the court. It's been as small as 5 up to 11, 7, 9. And since about the 1890s or so, we've been at the present number. You could go in tomorrow with a majority of the House and the Senate and get the president to sign off, and then you can increase the number. You could do that. again, the gets to the larger issue. It's all about voting, right?
Yeah.
We've got a 2024 election, as we just talked about. We've got two candidates, at least, on either side. And does that make a difference? You bet it does. And so those where do Supreme Court justices come from? They come from presidents who nominate them.
As we know.
And Senates confirm or not confirm them. It's all about elective politics. If you're sick and tired of this kind of thing, that's what you need to do. You need to vote for a president who views your concern about this legitimately. You need to be concerned about your United States senators and the ways in which they approach this very important issue of confirming presidential nominees. It's all about voting.
They stole them. We got John on the line. I don't believe it, but let's check it. Hey, John, you won a couple of tickets to go see the Brewers take on the Tigers tomorrow. Any political thoughts today, John?
No, thanks a lot for the tickets. I appreciate your show, and I'm glad there's a station, a talk radio station, that's speaking the truth.
So just right on, brother.
Keep on doing what you're doing.
All right. Appreciate it, John. Enjoy the game. I hear they're good tickets. I haven't been there yet. But, John, have a great time, man. Go Brewers, but they aren't playing my Detroit Tigers. Jim, we're going to hit a break in about a minute. When we come back, I want you to ponder this. Former U.S. attorney. It's kind of a big deal. You were involved in lots of court cases.
I was.
I want to know, what do you think, man? I mean, I know what I think. I see what I see. But, you know, I'm just a guy talking on the radio, my old college buddy. We've been bouncing back and forth. I don't have any formal legal training, although I did take the LSAT
twice. There you go.
Jim.
All right. Law school's still out there for you, in other words, right?
You've been there, man. And your opinion matters a whole hell of a lot. And you've been involved in the justice system a whole hell of a lot. I want your opinion. We come back. James Santel, former U.S. attorney. We got a lot of strange things going on in the U.S. Supreme Court. Deals, real estate deals not being disclosed, justices taking lavish vacations to the tune of $500,000 for one trip. What does that do to your confidence in the justice system? James Santel, former U.S. attorney, coming back with us, 844-967-2789.
The Devil's Advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Well, I don't mind stealing bread from the mouths of
the dead. And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open. We'll give away some more Brewers tickets in the next hour. But in the meantime, 844-967-2789. If you have something that you want to share, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, host Morning Cannolis on Saturdays, 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Network. Joining me, Jim, I laid it out there. Hope you have 2 minutes to think about it. With these stories coming out about the U.S. Supreme Court, these justices, and we talked about Clarence Thomas and these trips. Here's what he said, quote, "As friends do, we have joined them, the Harlins, on a number of family trips during the more than quarter century we've known them. Also, as Reuters reported in 2009, Harlan Crowe provided $500,000 to conservative political advocacy group Liberty Central, which was founded by Ginny Thomas." So that's kind of that. Neil Gorsuch reported today some real estate sales not disclosed, right? These kinds of things happening and seemingly nothing will be done about it. Nothing's going to be done about it. Nothing has been done about it to this point. And these, as mentioned, Jim, they're deciding lots of very important cases over the breadth of our existence here in this country. Very important. This U.S. Supreme Court. Does it give you pause? What do you think?
Gives me great pause. It gives me profound pause. Why? Again, because of the magnitude of what they are deciding. The things that they decide in ways big and small, the things that we see in the headlines of the newspaper, those are the big ticket items, huge numbers of cases. They're going to be deciding about 60 different cases. We haven't talked about all of those yet, Dom, today, right? We're going to be doing that in the second hour. But huge numbers of cases related to everything from copyright to lots of things in my former ambit, if you will, criminal justice, the ways in which defendants are sentenced, issues related. Remember the crack powder distinction a number of years ago, having to do with equities and frankly, even racial concerns there. Huge numbers of things, I don't want to say in the weeds because they're not just in the weeds. Huge numbers of issues out there that affect how things work on a daily basis. Business. business, again, healthcare, all sorts of things, education, commerce. They've got a intellectual property case they're going to decide soon, having to do with everything from Andy Warhol to Prince. That one's coming up, right? And again, we may think that that's sort of humorous, but it's a big deal for the future of intellectual property and all kinds of things out there. And so when we look at that, we should look at that and say that the people who are making this decision are above reproach. There's no suggestion whatsoever that they are in any way influenced, and significantly, that we know who they are. Now, we don't need their grocery lists every week. We don't need to know how much they're putting in their Subarus for gas every week. But we do need to know about their sources of income. And even if they're not, even before this word broke about Trammell Crow, we were concerned, all America was concerned about the notion that we had a justice who was getting lots of money from an outside source, not just from his salary. All of those things should be disclosed, again, not because we necessarily think that they're going to be deciding cases in those areas, but because it is about transparency and we should know who our leaders are. And gosh, there are only 9 of them, right? This is not a matter of having to, well, there are 435 members of Congress. There's one president, members of the cabinet, many other agency officials who are appointed. But you can do this. And again, as a U.S. attorney, I disclosed on a regular basis every single little scrap and tittle of my ownings, which are not exhaustive out there. Why? Because you wanted to make certain that Jim Santel was not getting income from another source. You wanted to know if indeed I own property around the world, wherever those located. I don't, and I didn't. But all those things just go to the integrity of the system. I am hugely concerned about this, not only for that purpose, but also, as we said right before the last break, the future of our democracy. People begin to look at the Supreme Court already saying, you know, these major decisions, I disagree with them. All right, but we're still going to follow them. Isn't that amazing, too? They don't have an army. Who's going to enforce this? What an amazing thing in this country.
Yeah, belief's a hell of a thing.
Exactly. Belief is a hell of a thing. And they say something, and we all follow it because somebody writes a piece of paper, and we announce it, and we all fall in line.
Until we don't.
And when we decide not to do it, that's when anarchy happens in the state of Wisconsin, around the country, and we simply don't follow those people who are announcing what the law is. We may not follow those people who are even legislating what the law is. The executive branch comes forward and says, I would like to do this thing in the area of healthcare and education. And we say, well, you're the government with a small g or a capital G. We don't have to follow that. I'm a business here in Wisconsin. I've got rules and regulations that imply to me, that's just the government. That's when it all falls apart. And that's the reason why I, like you, Dom, I suspect most, if not all of your listeners, profoundly concerned about this. It's not just about the particulars of Clarence Thomas. It's about the larger issues that this implicates.
Now, as a U.S. attorney, you worked for the executive branch, right?
I did.
The Department
exactly.
of Justice.
Department of Justice.
But you were in court a lot.
Absolutely.
That's the judicial branch.
Appearing in front of the other branch of government, right?
Now,
right.
In the course of your career, Jim, did you ever have these kinds of whims, these thoughts, concerns about any particular judge that you were in front of?
I did not. So I worked for a federal district court judge, Robert Warren, former attorney general of the state of Wisconsin, former DA in Brown County, hired me my first job out of law school. My parents were thrilled that I got a job. And again, the kind of man who today would be a very conservative, if left-sided Republican. Great experience. And Judge Robert Warren consistently produced all these things. Again, like me, comes from modest means. We knew who he was. I appeared before the many other district court judges. They disclose things. They have to because of the ethics rules that apply to them.
Yeah, they have
the disclosure rules, right? Appear before the appeals court judges in Chicago. Again, we've got many appeals courts around the country. They also disclose not only sources of income. If they get an honorarium for speaking somewhere, they disclose that as well. Just because, again, it's good to know, and so that if indeed there is a matter that comes before them, they can do that. I looked at Ketanji Brown Jackson. Here's a woman who came onto the court and said, you know what, I've got this affiliation in the past with Harvard. For a while, not forever, but for a while, I'm going to recuse myself on any matters involving Harvard. Well, it turns out that there's a case right now pending about admissions and race and whether that can be considered. She will not be a part of that decision when it comes out in 6 weeks because she has said, in an abundance of caution, because I don't want somebody to think I'm deciding this in favor or against Harvard, I'm going to withdraw. That's the right thing to do. I never had a concern about that because the ethics rules, I think, prohibited that kind of bad behavior by district court judges, by appellate court judges. Ketanji Brown Jackson's example is a good one for all of them to follow.
James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, 844-967-2789. Great points. Let's squeeze in one caller before the top of the hour. Tom from McFarland, you are up. Welcome, Tom. What do you got for us?
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm not sure exactly why the Democrats are not making this an issue. The Constitution states rather clearly that Congress is the check on the court. Congress gets to make up as far as what the rules of the court are and the makeup of the court. And, you know, I always often hear Democrats saying, well, we have to pack more justices in there. It's like, no, we don't. We can just pass legislation that would put these standards into place, make them into law. We can put into place as far as the qualifications for the justices. And I'm not sure why the Democrats aren't making this a campaign issue as far as we need to, you know, bring in policies that would help protect the integrity of the court versus what's just running amok by the GOP.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Great point. Jim, can we legislate ourselves out of this pickle that we seem to be in with the U.S. Supreme Court justices?
Tom makes a lot of great civics points, which is the answer in part is yes. We can, in fact, as we were chatting just before, we can impose through the legislature a code of ethics and address a lot of this. It still has to be enforced. It still has to be complied with by the justices, but that can happen. And beyond that, again, this notion that the populace, including Tom, including John, others out there, should demand that as a part of our future campaigns.
Folks,
absolutely.
We'll be